Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about how to make up for lost time, what to do if you're starting to feel like you're behind, and catching up to your peers. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. I have a great Money Talk lined up for you today. Today's Money Buddy is going to join me to talk to all of you who feel like you're behind, which is all of us, honestly, at one point or another. There's always something or someone that you feel like you're behind or that they're further ahead than you. So what do you do? How do you handle that? And while we shouldn't compare our money situations, that doesn't stop us. So what do we do if we really do feel behind? What if we actually are behind? How do we adjust our mindset? How do we adapt and overcome those feelings? That's what I want to talk about in today's episode and what you're going to learn about. I want to introduce a brand new show that I'm releasing on October 28th called Financial Planning for Young Adults. Are you a young adult who feels like there's so much complexity behind this whole money thing and you don't even know why you should care about money? Well, I'm going to take the complex world of financial planning with so many topics that seem overwhelming and that you just can't figure them out, and I'm going to make them simple and understandable. We're going to take a look at some real stories from my life and from listeners' lives, as well as take some deep dives into some real world case studies. And I'm going to apply my CFP knowledge and help you understand how to make a plan with your money that fits into your life. I'm going to publish the trailer on this podcast feed, as well as a few episodes to introduce you to it. But if you would please subscribe to that show, if you're in any way interested, I would greatly appreciate it. And if you know a young adult in your life who could benefit from a show about financial planning and learn how to plan their finances, please consider sharing with them. As we move back into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my listeners from Toronto, Canada and Round Rock, Texas. Thank you so much for listening. You are at the top of my list of locations for the past 7 days. So let me know where you're listening from. I'd love to continue building out this map because it's super fun to see where on earth or where in the United States everyone is listening from. But today's Money Buddy is Lori Atwood. Lori Atwood is the founder and CEO of Fearless Finance and a CFP professional. Lori created Fearless Finance to make expert, fiduciary, hourly financial planning accessible to everyone with no sales, no minimums, and no judgment. Lori's been in finance for over 25 years, starting in investment banking, asset management, and private equity before starting Fearless Finance in 2016. The money talking points for this week's episode are: how important is time in our financial plan? 2, how do you recognize if you're starting late? And 3, how do you get ahead of your finances if it feels like you're behind? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Lori to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. So many times people feel like they're behind. They don't know where to get started or when they should get started. They feel like they're off track. And I want to start today with some of our money talking points. And just a reminder to everyone listening, these are simple, easy to take talking points to go discuss with family, friends, and like your coworkers. So let's start off with just this first one, Lori. How important do you feel time is in our financial plans?
So the dirty little secret about personal finance is that it's all about the trade-off between long-term and short-term. That's what it's about. And despite many people trying to make it about a billion other things, that's really what it's about. Mm-hmm. Can you sacrifice some stuff now for something that's going to happen later that maybe, you know, you don't even know if it's going to happen? And that's a hard thought to hold.
Yeah, that's a hard thought to hold is, can I give up that trip to some fast food restaurant?
Totally.
That time out with your friends in order to max out your IRA or something in that same vein?
Exactly.
Where it is so much like a bigger picture that you have to think about when it comes to that long-term time horizon. And often that long-term time horizon will hit us all of a sudden when we're in our 40s or 50s and you're getting a little bit closer to what was a long-term time horizon. How do we recognize if we're starting a little late?
Okay, so the first thing I wanna say is it's never too late.
Mm-hmm.
It's never too late. So don't get discouraged. That's the first thing. And the second thing I wanna say is let's talk for a minute about what we're talking about. Is a person feeling behind because they don't have 3 to 6 months of their expenses saved up for emergencies, or are they feeling behind because a lot of people in the college class they graduated with own their home already and they don't? They are vastly different financial mm-hmm. subjects, right? What I encourage people to think is for the foundational groundwork of your personal finances, truly, it's never too late.
that's a great point. There's so many different little aspects and things like that, but for that groundwork, you said it's never too late. Is there maybe some areas where it could be too late?
Not for, you know, not for things, again, I'm talking about the foundational groundwork, mm-hmm. which is, in my mind, having a few thousand dollars for rainy day expenses, things like car repairs, broken teeth, that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Having 3 to 6 months of your expenses saved up for emergencies, and emergencies, a total loss of income, usually job, divorce, or health related. Having, saving 15% of your earnings to retirement, whether that includes some employer match or not, you know, that's, everybody's different. Getting whatever consumer debt you might have under control. But number one, so those were the other four. Number one is spending less than you earn each month. Mm. It's never, ever too late to do that. Never too late. But what I worry about is with social media and so many people out there competing with each other on everything, people feel that they're behind because they don't drive a certain car, they don't wear certain clothes, they don't own a certain house. And that's not personal finance. Mm. That's a psychological need to compete. That's a totally different ballgame. And don't even put it in, under the umbrella of personal finance, because it's really a different, it's a different thing.
Yeah, what you're saying there is, are you associating these life decisions with your money, where it's not necessarily a sign that you're behind if you're not driving the biggest, fanciest SUV on the road or truck or whatever, when That's your right. money might be in the perfect situation for you right now, and you're not behind in any way, form.
Any way.
Yeah, and just because you don't drive the same vehicle or have the same size house, that doesn't mean you've lost all this time and how are you ever going to catch up? Don't worry about that so much by associating exactly. those two. But maybe you really are behind in your finances. Like maybe there is okay. maybe there is a true piece that is actually financially related. Let's take that emergency fund, for instance. How can you begin to get ahead if it does feel like you're behind? It feels like we just scratch and claw the whole time.
Or that mm-hmm. you're check to check, which I hear all the time from people. So now that we've decided there's a difference between FOMO and actually being behind, now let's tackle actually mm-hmm. being behind. The key to everything in personal finance, besides that the trade-off of long and short, is that you spend less than you earn. And you hit on a great point 2 minutes ago when you said somebody who doesn't drive the biggest SUV may actually be financially more secure. And mm-hmm. they're financially more secure because they're not mm-hmm. swayed by shiny objects, by trinkets. And so if you honestly want to get your financial house in order, the first thing you have to do is figure out if you're spending less than you earn each month. Mm-hmm. And in many parts of the country, housing is an outsized amount of what you spend each month. And it makes it very difficult to get the rest right. So the first thing you need to get right is your housing. If you're renting, you just need to make sure that your rent is reasonable. What does reasonable mean? Reasonable to me means that your rent or your mortgage payment plus any other contractual obligations, student loan payments, car payments, insurance, that kind of stuff, is less than 42% of your take-home pay. Did everyone hear me say that? Take-home pay. Once you're over 42%, there will be strain in the relationship. There will be stress. There will be spending due to stress.
And there might need to be some sacrifice to get within that percentage.
Definitely.
So often I see my audience, the young adults that I work with and coach, live on their own in a multi-bedroom apartment, and their rent is 60, 70% of their income. Yep. And it's no wonder you can't afford anything else. It's because all of your money is going towards this. So the thing you said right there that is huge is we need to be careful and make sure that our rent or mortgage or whatever it may be is in an appropriate percentage of our whole income, and sacrifice may be required.
That's right. And so the first place you look is to the biggest expense, and that's normally housing for most anybody out there, especially young adults, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I urge people to do is don't look at one little thing. Don't say, I don't have an emergency savings. I don't have 3 months. I want people to look at their full financial context. What is the baggage and the habits you're bringing from your earlier life? What are some of the things that you're on the hook for? Maybe student loans or whatever it happens to be. Maybe you have a child support payment. Where did you sign a lease? How long are you on that lease? Where is your job? Are you searching for a job? Are you happy with your job? It's the entire context. how often, because we talk about things like eating out, going to some fast food restaurant because I don't want to cook. People don't realize that all of those pieces are linked.
Mm-hmm.
If you are content with your life, your job, your relationship, your home, your body, if you're content with that, those other things, those expenses go down magically. So you want to look at the whole context for yourself and don't just pick on one thing because it's just not telling the story.
Yeah, I like that idea. We need to look at our whole financial picture. We can't just dive deep on cutting your restaurant spending because maybe that isn't the culprit. Maybe that's not actually what's holding you back. Maybe it's your rent. Maybe it's your student loan payments. You need to look at this whole picture, and there's a lot of great apps out there that'll help you. Do you think that's something that's important as a first step is just like how valuable truly is that holistic financial picture?
I think it is the most valuable because you need to know what's coming in and going out each month, but you also need to understand your balance sheet. What do I have saved? What do I have in cash? Where is my debt? And then you need to understand your own habit. Mm-hmm. What am I comfortable with? What am I uncomfortable with? Like my husband, he can't sleep at night without a certain amount of cash in the bank. He's just a stress case. Whereas I'm a little bit more, we're fine, it's invested. Everybody's different. And if you're in a relationship, you have to understand all of those differences or we're gonna have conflict over money. So it's critical that you understand all the aspects of your life. If you're somebody who's like, I have to go out with my friends at least twice a week, right? Otherwise your head is not settled. Then let's make sure the rest of your financial context works around that.
Yeah, that's such a fun point that financial planning and personal finance is getting to, that you don't have to live a life of deprivation.
Yes.
You don't have to completely avoid seeing your friends in the name of it's not in the budget, right? Like you don't need to live this life of deprivation. One of the things you mentioned is finding that balance between spouses. And I wanted to give a tip as well. What me and my wife do is I am way more vigilant about money. I watch it all the time. I'll be the can't sleep if my spreadsheet's off by a penny kind of person.
Yeah.
And that's my problem. But for my wife, she's a lot more willing to, as long as the money is in a place where it can be accessed or invested in a way that we've agreed on already. She doesn't want me going and just playing with the money, right? So we've set up guardrails in our financial relationship where it says, as long as our cash is in an account that we can get in 2 to 3 days with an ACH or whatever it may be, she doesn't care which bank account it's at. If it's at SoFi, Ally, or whatever, move it around for something.
Not a priority for her.
Yeah, and that's okay. For me, maybe I want to chase a higher APY or whatever because we're sitting on a lot of cash for a savings thing coming up. As long as we can access it, it's fine. I don't need to check with her. And we're doing the same thing with our credit card rewards. If we can use them in a way where the points can be optimized, then we'll leave them as points. If we can redeem them as cash, I'm free to redeem it as cash. Like she doesn't want to watch those as closely as I do. Set up those guardrails, and that can be super helpful, especially if you're in a relationship.
So setting up the guardrails makes a ton of sense. It reduces the stress around communication about money. I have a mom who's 90 years old, and she's 90 years old. She doesn't get around much. She still spends $300 to $400 a month on what I would call discretionary spending. So at 90, it's happening. And so anybody who thinks that it's never, I'm gonna spend nothing and live this life of scarcity is kidding themselves. And unfortunately, not unlike dieting, once you break the seal, whatever term you want to use for it, you're gonna overspend. So we want to have conscious, mindful, realistic guardrails for everyone. If you're in a relationship, if you're single, you set them for yourself. If you're in a relationship, it requires communication that is calm, with the best intentions, with this partner. One of the tips that I have for that is let's get you before the mistakes are made. Because once the mistakes are made, there's shame and guilt and all those horrible things that are horrible for relationships. So I want to get you before that. So if I can get you where we've figured out what your discretionary pool is for the month, and let's say you have kids, right? We have a daughter. When she was young, in the spring and in the fall, there was always a lot of clothing that had to be rebought because she was growing out of stuff. And I would say to my husband, because he didn't do the buying, I did, I've got to get boots, I've got to get coats, I've got to get a couple of things. Go easy on the discretionaries. I'm spending a lot of money on seasonal stuff. And he didn't have to get mad, and I didn't get mad, because you're doing it before it happens. And so that's the critical piece to minding your discretionary spending.
Yeah, do it before the problem happens. Talk about it before it comes up. That's why I have a resource about this on my website as well. My wife and I have our budget meeting each month at the end of the month, and it's not to review the previous month.
No.
It's to talk about the next one, and that's what's so huge.
I do want to talk about.
I want to talk about budgeting a little bit here as well. It's kind of a bad word for people, and it scares people off right away. Maybe that's why professionals will use cash flow and whatever, right? It's kind of all the same thing.
Yeah.
Is budgeting something that we need to do?
So I'm one of those professionals that doesn't use the word budgeting. And I don't use it in my own house either. My husband and I have gotten to a rhythm where we meet in December and plan for the year. But if you're meeting monthly or if you're meeting weekly, that's fabulous. Here's my advice on this, whatever you want to call it, cash flow and whatever have you. You don't need to track the cable bill because guess what? It's the same every month. Hmm. Where people get caught is trying to track a million different line items. This month they bought more clothes and they didn't buy as much, they didn't take as many Ubers, so they're moving money from the clothing line to the Uber line. Get rid of all of that. That is just gonna make steam come out of your head. Don't do it. I don't do it, and I do this for a living. Instead, what I recommend people do is figure out what the pool is of full discretionary. What is full discretionary? Eating out, Ubers, entertainment, tickets to anything, clothing, all the random stuff we all buy on Amazon. All of that is discretionary. Have a pool and just make sure you're within that pool each month. So all you have to do is track that pool. You don't need to track the cable bill. You don't need to track utilities. That's all very consistent, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's such a great take on it because I've been doing that with a client of mine that I'm helping coach. I learned about this idea recently, actually, of taking, there's actually a third one that the idea I'm using uses, and it's like your non-monthly ones that you need to save up for.
Annual needs, like that's what we call it.
Yeah, your phone bill. If you're on Mint Mobile, you probably pay it every 3 months or every 12 months, and you need to save for that or else it's going to be a surprise.
I was just going to say, so we have a sinking fund called the annual needs. If we figure out vacations, car insurance, maybe you join a pool each summer. You know, maybe you have one of those concierge doctors and you have to pay an annual fee or whatever it is. Holiday gift giving. Maybe you're into that.
Christmas comes every year.
Yeah, exactly. On the same day. Yeah. We add all of that up and divide by 12. And that's what you should be putting in. You put the money in and then it's there for you when you need it.
And here's the trick. The next time you're surprised by one of these annual or semi-annual expenses, use that as your trigger to have the sinking fund alarms go off in your mind and be like, next year, I'm not getting surprised by this.
That's right.
If you're thinking, wow, that sounds like a budgeting system or a cash flow system that could work for me, please reach out to one of us. We'd love to help people get these things set up.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be as complicated as my one penny off spreadsheet. That's just, I'm a nerd in that way. That's the way I like to do it. And it makes people like you cringe or other people listening are like, no way I could do that.
It's just not me. And I do this for a living.
Yeah. And that's what makes this so fun. There can be so many unique ways to do it. As long as you find a system that works for you, who cares about other people's systems? Let them do what they want to do.
I have people who use a pencil and paper still. So yeah, go for it. If that works for you, great.
So the common term that people will hear thrown out is adulting, right? It's this term that's come up. What are some commonly overlooked aspects of this financial picture that people need to consider and start working on as they're getting into this realm?
Okay, so financial adulting, the thing we want to remember is the balance sheet aspect of being an adult and the cash flow aspect. The cash flow aspect is what we just talked about, which is what money is coming in and what money is going out, and is there anything left at the bottom? That's what we care about, right? Because the only reason to budget, why do we budget? Why do we care? We need that number at the bottom. That's why we care. Sometimes budgeting becomes this whole animal unto itself. It's not. It's a tool for us to get that number at the bottom that we can save, right? So the other aspect is the balance sheet. And the critical pieces on the balance sheet are the savings, retirement savings, and general savings. And if you have a child who you think might go to college, college savings, and then debt, and making sure that that's managed as well. For me, I like to tell people, please don't conflate or confuse those two things. One is static and long-term. The other is how you're running your life on a day-to-day basis to get that little bit of savings. please don't underestimate the power of saving $50 a month.
Yeah, just get the habit started.
Get the habit started, not the number, the habit. Get the habit started. I think of things monthly because that's how bills come in. Some people can do it weekly, and that's fine with me. But get something that's auto-transferred or that you actually do the act of putting it into a high-yield savings or whatever it is. It's really amazing. It's good for the spirit, too.
Yeah. And then naturally, too, this is a great point that I recommend people to get to, is 1 month of your income saved up, because then it allows you to not live paycheck to paycheck life.
That's right.
And if you slowly do that over time, great. Once you start to see that habit roll, you're going to be like, well, why couldn't I do $100 a month? I can see how that could work. And then you get that ball rolling in the right direction. One thought that I had, as you mentioned, balance sheet and cash flow, these could sound like businessy terms to people. I think that's kind of the first thought that came to my mind. How can we maybe make sure we're not getting too businessy with money, but also realize that we need to keep track of it in a similar sort of way? How do we avoid these terms scaring people off?
The word balance sheet scares people. One is flow and one is static.
That's You call it something else if you need to.
Yeah. One is a flow. It happens constantly. It's constantly going like that. And one is like this. If you just remember that, that's all you need.
There you go. That's a great place. I just wanted to make sure to touch on those, because those are terms that can tend to go in one ear and out the other. But you're just tracking where your money's going on a month-to-month basis, and then what your overall picture looks like as it keeps going. And
yes.
You hardly update that one. Like maybe, what, monthly, quarterly?
Once a year is what I can tell that your geeky flag is waving there. My husband and I do this once a year. We do a plan in December. Mm-hmm. For that year, and we're real sort of regimented. We stick to it. If you're somebody who needs more reminders quarterly, it makes a lot of sense. If you do it too often, you can get yourself crazy with it.
Yeah, you get lost in the weeds of your one penny spreadsheet, and that's kind of where I can get stuck. So maybe I need to slow down a little bit on how much I look at money. But another thing is, if people say they are feeling late in that emergency fund or that savings, or they've never done some sort of balance sheet approach, are they ever too late to get started? How can they get back on track?
It's never, never too late. Again, by way of anecdote, my parents got divorced. My mother was, I don't know what, 55, 56 when they got divorced. She had no money. The divorce just wrecked her. She's comfortably retired now.
Yeah,
because she started late, but she did it.
I had someone reach out to me and say, oh, we're getting started retirement savings at age 30 and we don't have anything else saved. What should we save? Because we feel like we're starting late. I'm like, 30? Like, you are fine.
You're right on it.
Like, you're probably still a little before average, which is great.
I think that's right. And so the other thing I caution clients is you have to remember that life has ups and downs. There are on ramps and off ramps. When you have two kids in daycare in many parts of this country, there's no chance that you can do general savings. You're just trying to keep your nose above water every month. That's okay, because we know when it ends. You lose your job. It takes you 6 months to get another job. You're not saving. Don't worry about your Roth in that 6 months. There are on-ramps and off-ramps. What we want to make sure is that you are, when things are going fine, you are saving at least 15% to retirement and you are doing some general savings. Don't beat yourself up when, you know, oh my gosh, I've got two kids in daycare. I've got a third on the way. And in my state, we don't have public school till they're five. And that's hard.
Yeah. Well, I like the reference to on-ramps and off-ramps, or just like there's these seasons of speeding up and slowing down where
seasons,
sometimes you're
on-ramps.
Letting it coast. Yeah, you're letting it coast. You're letting that friction maybe ease you back a little bit as you're looking at your cash flow. Maybe you're saying, oh, this month I need to not max out my IRA for the month. I need to go $100 less because something is coming up.
That's
okay if you're noticing it and you're paying that much attention to it, because
that's
when
right.
you do get in that season where you're speeding back up, you can say, oh yeah, let's turn the throttle back on. I can catch up on my IRA contributions because now I have another job that's paying me higher, or whatever
right.
it may be. It's totally possible to catch up. You just got to keep yourself pointed in the right direction and not let those recurring charges
right.
take you way off to the side.
That's right. And the key to catching up and the key to financial adulting, and I keep saying it, is you must spend less than you earn. And the only way to do that is to know what you earn and what you're spending. So whether it's a pencil and paper, whether it's a Google sheet, whether it's any of the number of apps that are out there, figure it out. Figure out what you and your partner, if you're partnered up, are taking home. Figure out what you're spending. Subtract. That's it. It's not fancy math. Yeah. Make sure that number's positive at the bottom. And then you can start thinking about whether there are places you can cut to make that number bigger. That's fine, too.
The trickiest math you may get into is dividing by 12 to figure out that annual.
Some division is required, yes.
And your phone will tell you the number.
We don't even do that anymore, right?
And the stress around this can be huge. That can be the main thing that keeps people stuck, is this stress of feeling like they're behind. Maybe they're too honed in on one area, like we talked about earlier, that you need to take a step back and look at your overall picture. How else can we reduce stress around this feeling behind or trying to get that on-ramp going?
I guess I can say it until I'm blue in the face or whatever, but you're not out of time.
Yeah.
You're not too late. The key is to stop freaking out about whatever happened in the past and start with the good habits. If you're 62, let's start with the good habits now. And the reduction of financial stress could be as simple as letting yourself off the hook, okay? Because when you come and sit in my office, the first thing I'm going to do is let you off the hook. And I'm going to say, don't worry, that was in the past. We're going to focus on what the priorities are going forward and how much we can catch up and when we can catch up. And maybe it means that you retire slightly later. Maybe it means that your retirement looks slightly different. Either way, we're going to catch up.
Yeah. And I love that approach of just saying, you're here now, whatever happened, happened, but we plan going forward. There's no possible way to plan going backwards. People work through this. Have you seen people catch up when they feel like they're late? Have you seen this transformation actually happen?
Millions of times, thankfully. And it's really a wonderful thing to see. A lot of times people will come to me in a frenzied mess and they're all upset. The first thing we do is let them off the hook for the past. And then make a plan. I'm looking for little wins here. I'm looking for small scores, right? If you're doing that $100 a month into my high yield savings that we set up for you, that's a win. Then we build on top of it and we keep building. Suddenly this person has their emergency fund. Suddenly they're able to, whatever, take the vacation they want to take or whatever it is. And they're so empowered. And they feel so good. And money is no longer the monster under the bed. Because here's the thing I say to everybody. It's not a monster. Money is inanimate. It's nothing. It is nothing, right? It's merely a tool. It's something we count. It's all the other stuff that you're attributing, that you're hanging on the money tree as an ornament, that is crushing you and making you stress out. The money doesn't care. The money has no feelings. And so I say to people a lot, often, very often, the thing that's most important to your personal finances is your happiness. If you're contented, if you're satisfied with your job, your body, your relationship, your home, you're going to naturally spend less and be naturally more able to stick to whatever plan we agreed together. And so if there's a gap somewhere and you're unhappy with something, fill the gap. Fix the gap. Get the job that pays less. We'll figure out the right plan around the lesser salary, but you're happier. And in the long run, that's going to be better for your finances and better for you.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point to make. It doesn't matter if you're making $90,000 or $70,000. If you're happy at the $70,000 and you're making your life work and it's okay, then who cares? We get to make personal finance personal, and you get to do whatever you want to do with your money. The picture that came to my mind as you were talking about people maybe taking it a little slower, doing one thing at a time. You don't stand at the bottom of this big staircase and jump up 7 or 14 stairs all at once. Like that,
no.
It's unless you're some rare like freak of nature that can jump that far and that high, is not going to happen. So don't expect yourself to stand at the bottom of your Mount Everest of finances and just take this big leap to the top where you're financially independent and retired. And that's where the value can come in working with a financial coach or a financial planner or someone in the financial space can help guide you along this path. What do you think the value is in working with a professional?
It's all the things that you just said. I mean, we're in the age of information. There's so much information everywhere that it's just unfathomable. But what people a lot of times are looking for is confirmation. They're looking to make sure that they're doing the right thing, and that's what expert advice does for you. We can help you cut things up into small enough bites. We can help you focus on that priority and let the other little things go or reduce mm-hmm. them. So we bring focus to things. We help with communication between partners. We help with the understanding the overall context for each partner or just yourself if you're an individual. We help get a plan in place that you can do the little bits.
Yeah. And if money is not your game and it's just not your area, that's also where a professional can be extremely helpful because they can take that burden off your back and help show you a little bit of the way and educate you enough to get you up to speed and then help you really get racing on that on-ramp going with some of these analogies we've used.
My metaphors.
I always get those confused. Yeah. As we are wrapping up here, Lori, this has been a fantastic conversation.
I've enjoyed it.
A couple final questions here to wrap us up. First one is, how can people connect with you if they wanted to ask you a question or potentially work together?
That would be excellent. So you can go to fearlessfinance.com and there's a contact link and fill out the form. If you put Money Talk in the promo code, I'll give you $50 off the first meeting. We have a team of associates around the country. We can work with anyone, any state, any
awesome.
Place on their journey. And it's
fantastic.
Hourly.
What a great way to get people started, offering them that little bit of help there. Lori, thank you for that. What's one thing when you were getting started and trying to get on the right track and maybe catch up in your own sense, what's one thing you wish you would have known sooner to get you on the right track with money?
So I am going to be honest here with you. I did not start saving for retirement as early as I would recommend that somebody does. I am guilty of all of that. And so I think the thing that is really important, especially for younger people, and I wish somebody had said to me when I was in my 20s, is even the small amounts matter, right? So doing whatever you can, even the small amounts, it's all going to matter. A dollar in your 20s matters more than a dollar in your 60s. So get started. Just get started. Don't stick your head in the sand because avoidance is the most costly situation.
Yeah. Avoidance can really just stifle any progress you want to make if you just keep burying your head in the sand. Lori, that's a great place to put it on. $10 a month, $20, whatever you can do, just get started. But thank you so much for coming on the show, Lori.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much to Lori for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed that conversation and I was able to take a lot away from it. So I hope each and every one of you listening were able to take something away, whether it's realizing you don't have to jump up your entire financial Mount Everest all at once, or realizing that you may want to work with a professional or a coach. I can help you get on board with the budgeting app and get you set up with a system that works for you. If you're trying to figure all this whole thing out around budgeting, cash flow, or whatever you want to call it, please reach out. I'd be happy to help you get set up. I especially loved the conversation about how most times you feel behind, not for a financial reason, but for some life comparison reason, especially vehicles. Those are a huge one, unfortunately. People see all these fancy cars driving around and they feel like they need to own a fancy car or a big house. Maybe renting is the better option and homeownership isn't something you should be considering, but so often these things are dangled out in front of us as tempting carrots that we need to chase. And in order to be financially successful, we have to reach all these big goals that maybe don't actually fit into our financial life and our financial system. So that was a big one for me. Are you feeling behind financially because of some reason that's not even financial? Maybe you're doing great financially, but you don't drive that big fancy car or have a big nice fancy e-bike or who knows what it is. You know what it could be and what's tempting you and making you feel like you're behind. Is it actually a reason to feel behind? That was a great question that Lori posed. And honestly, a great perspective to take with this whole conversation. But I do want to wrap up here with some of my thoughts around our third money talking point, which is, how do you get ahead of your finances if it feels like you're behind? Well, sometimes it just takes hard work. Sometimes you do have to sacrifice and cut back. Like I mentioned with the rental situation, maybe you need to find a roommate. Maybe that's just the option that you need to do. And sometimes that can be tough. It can be a hard truth and a hard pill to swallow. But sometimes you truly need to cut back. The one thing that Lori suggested as a blanket piece of advice is living below your means. And I think that is one that truly does go for everybody. Now, you could say, oh, I save up in the early months so that I can live beyond my means in the summer months, however you like to do it. But I think overall, on average, our annual spending needs to be less than our annual income. And now software, like we were talking about, these apps, spreadsheets, or whatever it may be, pen and paper, some sort of way to truly visualize this can be super helpful in keeping you on track and keeping you below your means, because you actually have to track it to know how much you're spending, but you also have to track it to know how much you're bringing in so that you know how much you can spend. I also really loved Lori's point of the three buckets. You have a bucket for your regular monthly bills that stay surprisingly consistent, which is true. You also have your annual needs or maybe semi-annual needs like car insurance, your phone bill, renter's insurance or homeowner's insurance, Christmas, birthday gifts, all those sort of things come around regularly and you can set a target for them and you can save for each one of those. That can be your second budget, those annual needs or non-monthly expenses. And then you just have your flexible expense budget or your discretionary spending. And if you can keep that within a certain amount, who cares what you spend it on? Now, if you do need to get more granular because you notice that discretionary budget is just disappearing every single month, then maybe you do get a little more granular. But it is such a great starting point to consider, what's my monthly bills? What are my non-monthly annual needs? And then what is my discretionary spending? That's another great point that I want to hit home here. Everything is going to be fine. If you're just taking the right steps and moving in a good direction, no matter what season of life you're in, whether it's an on-ramp, off-ramp, or whatever it may need to be right now, as long as you're taking steps in the right direction, you're going to be okay. And now that does it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed the interview and the conversation we were able to have. Please make sure to take the money talking points or whatever really stuck out to you from this episode, share it with a friend, and go and have a money talk with a fellow money buddy. And if you have any questions at all or wanted to get started with some budgeting app or tool that's going to help you track your income and expenses and take steps in the right direction, please schedule a free money talk with me using the link in the show notes. I'd be happy to help each and every one of you figure out which next step you need to take. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to connect with me through my website. You can subscribe to the newsletter or submit your name and email and a question, and I'd be happy to answer it on the show or email back to you. But if you're looking to get started with budgeting, I'm a partner with My Budget Coach, and I would love to help you out. Please reach out to me if you have any questions about getting that cash flow planning started. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about it with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.